Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Maureen Stewart. The first news story we're going to talk about today is the speculation in the media that the Government of National Unity cabinet announcement is imminent, i.e. it's going to be before the end of the week. A source close to Ramaphosa, reported by News24, who is not authorized to speak to the media, confirmed that the president was expected to make an all-important announcement on Thursday. And at the same time, News24 says that it understands that no agreement has been reached with the DA yet. So this is an interesting place to be in, and I think whatever we get from it is going to come down right to the last minute. There's been this kind of strategic leaking of information about the composition of cabinet, what the various parties were demanding. As far as I understand, that letter reporting to be from Helen Ziller was in fact real, where the DA made claim to a number of cabinet posts. I think there were 10 or 11 of them. It's very possible, though, that, of course, that's more just a negotiating tactic, and at the end of the day, they're going to get something closer to 7, which is actually kind of what they originally seemed to ask for. This, I understand, was in response to the ANC's opening offer, which was 3 cabinet positions for the DA. It's also not clear really what all of the other members of the National Government of National Unity are going to get. The ANC sources have told the media that all of them will probably get a cabinet position, but I suspect most of them will just get deputy minister positions. Maybe one or two of them might possibly bag a ministerial position. Maybe the Patriotic Alliance, for example, will, and I'm sure the IFP will as well, being one of the larger parties in the Government of National Unity. So according to the ANC, there are now 10 parties in the Government of National Unity, which is the ANC, the DA, the Patriotic Alliance, the Freedom Front Plus, the UDM, who originally decided that they were going to side with the EFF and MK in the so-called Progressive Caucus, but then changed their mind and seemed to have flipped sides. Al-Jamaha, who just kind of seems to support the ANC, whatever. Rise Mzanzi, the Pan-Africanist Congress, the PAC, the IFP, and GOOD. So, yeah, a lot of diversity in that coalition in terms of what various parties believe and who they represent. I suspect quite a lot of those parties are probably not that concerned with policy. But still a lot of ideological difference in that bunch. Morris, what do you make of how the negotiations have gone so far? And, you know, do you think that the DA and ANC will reach some kind of agreement at the end?
Well, just to follow on your point about saying there's not, most of the parties don't seem to care about policy. Gaita McKenzie came out and literally said it's not about policy for him, it's about power. So it tells you quite a lot. And actually, I mean, it's probably something to be, you know, that we should actually applaud him for that, because he's probably one of the most honest politicians in the country. So, yeah, I mean, that's quite interesting. I mean, I don't think anybody should be surprised that this is taking so long. You know, we've spoken about on the show before how in other countries drawing up coalition agreements takes much longer. And I think this is something South Africa needs to possibly look at, you know, as we head into this kind of new reality of being a country of coalitions. We should maybe see, maybe extend the period that a government needs to be formed after an election. At the moment, it's only 14 days, which is actually quite short, especially when there are all these various parties trying to form governments and so on. And in other countries, it can take up to months. I mean, I've mentioned before in Belgium, it took 500 days.
Yeah, 500 days to form a government. So for almost 2 years, there was absolutely no stable governing structure of any kind. Although, of course, they've got, shall we say,
Belgians tell me it was a golden age for their country.
I suspect they have also somewhat better functioning civil service, which perhaps carry things along, and they don't face a 40% unemployment crisis like we do.
Yeah, but overall, I think, I mean, lots of stuff can still happen, but I think nobody should panic yet, I don't think. This was always going to be inevitable, and we should actually be surprised that things have gone fairly smoothly as they have. And that all said, I think the ANC and the DA have been fairly mature in this, actually. There has been some leaking and so on, but I think it's all been pretty strategic. And I think, yeah, Overall, you know, the politicians have, of course, I mean, you can always criticize politicians, but I think you should give credit where it's due. And I think this is perhaps marginally one of those cases.
Well, we'll see when the cabinet is announced whether this thing is actually going to hold together. That's going to be, I think, the sort of key first test, because we may very well see somebody in the mix get sour grapes over the whole thing. Could be anyone. The ANC could have factions that are unhappy that the DA got too much. The DA might be unhappy that it got too little. The IFP might be unhappy that it's not getting enough prominence or didn't get the portfolios it wanted. And the same for all of the other smaller parties. They may all not be happy with this or that or want more or decide they can get more out of being with the EFF-MK block on the outside. Yeah, very interesting to see. Also, it's going to be interesting to see the kind of, I suppose, the next phase will also be then appointing committee chairpersons and things, which will be another sort of negotiation, I suspect, between the governments, between the parties. There's also been some speculation that this whole thing might get extended down to more local government level. So we've already seen the expansion of the government to national unity to the KZN government, where it seems to have already gotten off the ground. And Gauteng, where they're also waiting for finalization of the cabinet there. But there's also some speculation it could go down to the city and municipal level. But as we said on the show before, that's maybe not the greatest idea. Although, you know, there is less ideological.
I think it would be better to leave that. Yeah, and I think it would be better to leave, you know, various municipalities or whatever to, as we said on the show the other day, I mean, Celia Brink seems to be starting to do a decent job in Tshwane, and I think it would be better if he could be left to see what he can do, at least up until 2026, and then let the voters, you know, decide what happens then. But yeah, I mean, it's all quite exciting, actually, to be honest. I mean, nobody thought you'd be in this situation even 2 months ago, I don't think.
So let's talk a little bit about the newest kid on the block, the MK Party, and what their parliament is going to look like. So after initially boycotting parliament, the MK Party seems to have changed its mind and realized, I think correctly, that this was a strategic mistake, that by boycotting parliament, they were essentially just cutting themselves in a big way out of the conversation. There was also some talk that they would not be able to get their salaries if they had not come and basically taken the oath, which I'm sure was a big motivating factor for many people. So what does the MK caucus look like? Well, it's got a whole bunch of, shall we say, lowlights or highlights, depending on your point of view, from South African politics of previous years. The chief whip and the sort of leader of MK in parliament is impeached former judge president of the Western Cape, John Hlophe. It's also got one of Zuma's daughters, Duduzile Zuma, who is, shall we say, active on social media. And has been accused of many things, including fanning the flames of the July riots, shilling for Russian intelligence. She's had many accusations laid against her, and she is, of course, continues to have a very sort of, shall we say, fiery disposition when it comes to discussing South African politics. Des van Rooyen, the shortest-lived financial minister in the country, the so-called weekend special, who was appointed by Jacob Zuma to be the finance minister, and there was such a negative reaction from the markets and business that he was forced to essentially fire him after just one weekend. Andile Ntlama, who is one of the country's most virulent and unpleasant racists, who really sort of uses genocidal language and says nasty things. He was, of course, formerly a member of the EFF until he fell out with Julius Malema and was quite literally chased out of the party by an angry mob at some point. So he's returning to parliament now as a member of MK. And the husband of Busisiwe Mkhwebane, who is an EFF MP now, former public protector, who is also the first public protector to be removed. Her husband is in the MK caucus. Morris, in our pre-show discussion, the phrase rogues gallery was used, and I think that's pretty much sums it up. This is kind of like a sort of special collection of some of the most ethically compromised, anti-constitutional, race-peddling nastiness thing I've ever seen in a single organization. And this is compared even to the EFF, which I think they perhaps surpass. I don't know. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I agree with you. There's not much more you can add to that. I mean, as you say, just like a bunch of quite nasty, ethically compromised people. I mean, there's not one person I've seen there that I've thought, you know, he's actually, even in the EFF benches, there's one or two people like, you know, I disagree completely with somebody like Floyd Chivambu. And he also, I think he has done some, done some ethically questionable things, but at least you can see he's somebody who actually thinks about stuff. You can disagree completely with his ideology, but he's, you know, not just an empty vessel. And I don't think when it comes to MK, I don't think there's much when it comes to intellectual heft there, especially when you're looking at people like Duduzile Zuma. You know, it was quite interesting. She was on during the election or just after the election, she was at the results center, and somebody, and she was being interviewed and said, "Well, what are you going to do if MK, you know, wins the election?" Said, "No, we're going to bring back the Zuma years. You know, things were going so well under President Zuma." And said, "Like, how were they going well?" And said, "No, they were going well. And what will you do to get that back?" And then Duduzile Zuma just said, "You know, it'll be interest rates and stuff like that." So it's really, there's nobody there that's obviously much of a thinker. You know, I suppose somebody like John Thorpe is probably quite a smart person. You don't become a judge president if you are not intelligent. But I think his ideology and so on is not something we need in South Africa. He's clearly an anti-constitutionalist. So yeah, overall, it's just a pretty toxic bunch there, I think. And from what I've heard as well, MK changed the changed their list to allow to put people like John Thorpe and Andile Ngcitama into parliament. They weren't on the original list, so there's been some shenanigans there, which I'm sure is also going to cause some problems for the party down the line when people thought they were going to be getting a million rand salary. And now suddenly they're told, no, you're going to have to make space for, these people. So I think MK is already making a rod for its own back. And I'd be very surprised if we don't see infighting and factional fighting over this kind of stuff in the pretty near future.
Indeed, we've already seen a whole bunch of that in MK. Although it seems as though the group Zuma was leading was very decisively victorious in that internal fight. But in another interesting aspect of MK being sworn into parliament was that they had promised in their manifesto that they would hold a referendum calling for the abolition of the constitution and a return to parliamentary supremacy like we had before, and that there would be no constraints on the will of the people, as they put it. Of course, they didn't get anywhere close to winning the election. And then when they became MPs, they had to take an oath to uphold the constitution, which was, I think, somewhat amusing. They sort of seem to have slightly changed their rhetoric because, of course, journalists asked them about this contradiction between being an explicitly anti-constitutional party and then also swearing an oath to uphold the constitution. And John Thorpe gave this response saying, "We are not apologetic in our call for the law to be Africanized. By that we mean bring back the laws that used to govern the African people. One of those laws is this: the land in Africa can never be the subject of private ownership. The land belongs to the nation it belongs to. The nation doesn't form part of private ownership. We are calling for the reinstatement of African law, Africanizing the law according to which the land does not become the subject of private ownership." I think that while there are some people in the country who might be sort of sympathetic to that on a kind of surface level, when you really kind of drill down to the core of it, that means that the official policy position of MK, as it is with the EFF, is to reduce the number of black landowners in South Africa to zero, because the state will be the only landowner in the country. And I don't know about you, but I have a feeling that there's a lot of people in this country who are not going to be very happy with that. And I'm not talking about, commercial white farmers or something like that. Maurice, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and private property. No country in the world has become prosperous without pretty good protections on private property. And South Africa can also forget about becoming a prosperous country if all land and so on is vested in the state. We've already seen what happens in places like KwaZulu-Natal, the land under the Igunyama Trust. People can't really use land that their family's been on for generations as collateral, and that, or they're not willing to develop it because it's not actually their land, even though they've been on there for literally generations. So this is as I say, if you want a prosperous country, you need private property laws, you need protections for private property and so on. And yeah, this is just, I mean, I would be interested if John Chlope would be, you know, he's probably quite a wealthy guy, having been a judge for so long. He's probably got some properties around the country. I wonder if he'd be fine with people just sitting, you know, deciding to camp out on property that he owns somewhere. I'd imagine he wouldn't be, and he'd probably call the police or private security to remove anybody who decided that they wanted to come live in one of his homes.
Yes. I have a feeling that insisting that everyone in the country become a renter of the state subject to the whim of local bureaucrats is not going to go down particularly well with anyone who actually is not politically connected. So, yes, no, I don't think this is a vote winner for MK as much as they might think that it is. The other aspect, of course, of all of this is that the EFF has been very welcoming of MK into Parliament. They said that they will be doing all they can to assist MK get settled into Parliament, and that together they will form this so-called Progressive Caucus. It's kind of a little bit awkward, though, because at some point or another, I'm pretty sure that Julius Malema has had a fight with almost every single one of these senior people in the MK party. He referred to John Chlope once as a, quote, rotten potato. He's been extremely critical of Zuma. He went from saying, I will kill for Zuma and die for Zuma, to Zuma is the problem in the country and we must get rid of him, and he's a corrupt and evil person who's undermining the revolution. And then he's now back on the Zuma is great train. Andile Ndutama, he, of course, had, shall we say, a rather explosive falling out with. And now he's going to be buddy-buddy with him in Parliament. And, of course, he's been very critical of a lot of these people's connections to the Gupta family. But, yeah, Julius doesn't seem to be too bothered about these kind of things. You know how he has this ability to change with political winds. Any thoughts on that, Maurice?
Yeah, I know. I mean, as you say, it just shows the kind of flip-flopping that Julius Malema is pretty well known for now. And also, just one thing I'd like to also just draw attention to is South Africa. We have a bit of a problem of Newspeak, which I'm sure people here know. It's from 1984, George Orwell's famous book, where Newspeak is the kind of new English that the regime is trying to implement. And in its you know, there's the Ministry of Peace, which is basically the Ministry of War, and the Ministry of Love, I think, which is the torture department. And yeah, we have that too. And we have the Progressive Caucus, who has some of the most regressive parties in it. I don't know anybody who thinks that MK, which is wants us to return to basically feudalism, can be thought of as progressive in any way.
Yes. But yeah, I think the longevity of MK is still very much an open question. The party very definitely could consolidate itself, but it also might not be able to survive the next 5 years. And I think that is one of the big unanswered questions of our politics, is whether that's going to happen. Anyway, so we look forward to finally getting some news on the government of national unity and seeing which direction our country is going in. The next thing to be watching out for once we see who's in cabinet is whether they're actually going to change any policies. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether you got all the saints and the angels from heaven to come and administer the country. If you have terrible policies, if you have bad ideas and you try to implement them, there's a limit to how well you can implement them. And until we see some major reforms in the way that we actually do things in government, we're still going to stay with high unemployment, and we're still going to stay with crushing poverty that ruins the lives of millions of people. Anyway, that's a wrap, and we'll see you tomorrow. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.